when you hear a show tune from the Great White Way, does a shiver run through ya? Well, we're giving them to ya. Sing hallelujah and shout hooray. Come on along and listen to Broadway to Main Street.
Was there ever a more beautiful song written for the Broadway stage in the 1950s? Hello, this is Larry Maslon, your host for Broadway to Main Street here on 88.3 WLIW-FM, Long Island's only signature individual, one-of-a-kind NPR station. And that magnificent song was written, music and lyrics by Mark Blitzstein, for the musical Juno. And you heard Monty Amundsen and Shirley Booth. And today's episode is going to be a celebration of one of the most idiosyncratic, wonderful, complicated, complex writers for the American musical stage, Mark Blitzstein. And I have to thank the Kurt Vile Foundation for Music Incorporated for underwriting today's episode. And who, listeners, would be better to join me on this musical journey than our good friend Stephen Blyer, artistic director of the New York Festival of Song and a Juilliard professor, and one of my consistent from colleagues, I don't know Steve now for decades, and every time we work on a project, it's a bundle of laughs, and I come away knowing so much more, and I'm not only a better appreciator of music, I'm a better human being. So welcome to Broadway to Main Street, Steve.
Yes, and I'm a great fan of this show, which I consider one of my great educators in American musical theater history. Well, it is a truly great show.
So there we are. So we're going to spend as much time as we can cram into 54 minutes talking about this unique individual. And you've recorded a marvelous album of his music, and you've played him in concert many, many times. How did you first come across Mark Blitzstein, and how did he strike you? I mean, what attracted you to his work specifically?
When I was a kid, I used to take records out of the New York Public Library, drag them home on the subway, on the bus. And one of them I found was this thing called The Cradle Will Rock. It was the LP with Jerry Orbach. And I was just really taken with it. Not so much for its very left-wing politics, because I was slightly above my pay grade at the time, but for the snap and sizzle of the music and the vividness of the characters. I did an evening of Bernstein and Blitzstein songs with Martha Schlamme, the cabaret singer, and Alvin Epstein, the iconic actor. And that was my first time playing a great deal of Blitzstein.
Well, let us go begin at the beginning. He was a classically trained composer and found his way into, I would say, a political awakening as the Depression began, and had played some music for Brecht and decided to write his own. I think he called it an agitprop, Gilbert and Sullivan vaudeville crazy show called The Cradle Rock, which was produced, as I think many people know, by the Federal Theater Project, specifically by John Houseman and Orson Welles. And as theater legend has it, it was scheduled to open on June 16th, 1937, but the federal government closed it down at the last minute, and the very pioneering and firebrand cast decided to present it in the theater. A long, long story. But one of the things that's interesting about Cradle Rock, it actually produced the first cast album. A lot of people think that was Oklahoma. It wasn't. This was Many Sides on Musicraft that was recorded late in 1937 and with Mark Blitzstein at the piano. So here is the first cast album ever and the beginning of the Cradle Rock, with the composer, lyricist, book writer himself introducing the scene.
Scene one is a street corner. It is the night of a big union drive. The mall stands at the lamppost. There is a phone attached to it.
I'm checking home now. Call it a night. Going up to my room. Turn off the light. Jesus, turn off that light. I ain't in Steeltown long. I work 2 days a week. The other five my effort days require. For 2 days out of seven, $2 bills I'm given. So I'm just searching along the street, for on those 5 days it's nice to eat.
Be too hard to frame him. hint, but every's fit to print. If something's wrong with it, why then we print to fit. With a hint and a D and a whole lot of no, for whichever side we'll pay the best. Haven't you filled the front page of your paper? This drunkard and raver who's out to gull the people. Just a minute, I'm not being indiscreet. I must consult the owner of my sheet. Please don't try to cross your good human new boss. I'm the owner of your famous paper since this morning. In that case, I wonder if my place is not worth more. The other crowd would like me to shake you. Then you'll see just how neatly I'll break you. Oh, the press, the press, the freedom of the press. They'll ever take away the freedom of the press. That form and series now.
Yes, mister, mister, yes.
With a hate in the D and a whole lot in no.
That was obviously a more robust recording with a full orchestra. That was the Saratoga Opera, fairly recent recording, which we're glad to have, of the Cradle of Rock. So, Steve, where do you place then this show as a piece of political entertainment in the context of the 1930s when, you know, across the street you had Rodgers and Hart, you would have had maybe the last few performances of Porgy and Bess, Cole Porter, et cetera, and so on. Where does Blitzstein fit into this musical theater continuum?
Well, I think he was trying to bring the spirit of Kurt Weill to Broadway. He was trying to make musicals that were for the people, of the people, about the people, with the people's concerns, in a language that was direct and absorbable, kind of like folk operas. The funny thing is that he was a very refined musician, and I don't think he actually had the common touch the way, say, Richard Rodgers and Gershwin actually did. I think he that there was always the feeling that it was meant to sound very down to earth, and yet it was fairly intellectual stuff.
So
Cradle, I think, is the most available of all of his pieces.
Interesting. So he was interested in the common man, but he sort of lacked the common touch to connect with them in a commercial basis, because this is the 1930s. I mean, you didn't have off Broadway or even off Broadway theaters back then. You had to make a success on the main stem. Here is a song that I adore. I don't think you could possibly do a compendium of great theater songs of the 1930s without including it. It's The Nickel Under Your Foot. It's from the second part of The Cradle Will Rock, and we'll hear a recording by Patti LuPone.
With Michael Barrett at the piano, my longtime co-artistic director at New York Festival of Song.
It was Tuesday, last week. Yeah, Tuesday. I had breakfast at Andy's, coffee and for lunch. I had coffee and again. For dinner, I could only afford coffee. Then I look on the floor and I see a nickel shining there. Gee, coffee and Andy. Then I look closer. There was no nickel. Not coffee and Andy. Just coffee, Andy. Cute, huh? Mister, you don't know what it felt like thinking that was a nickel under my foot. Maybe you wonder what it is makes people good or bad. Why some guy and every day is a wonderland tour. Oh, you can dream and scheme and happily put and take, take and put. But first be sure the nickel's under your foot. Go stand on someone's neck while you're taken, cut into somebody's throat as you put. For every dream and scheme's depending on whether all through the storm you've kept it warm. The nickel under your foot. And if you're sweet, then y'all will rotten, your pretty heart covered over with soot. And if at once you're gay and devil may careless and oh so hot, I know you've got the nickel under your foot.
Listen, here's a story. Not much fun and not much glory. Low class, low down, the thing you never care to see until there is a showdown. Here it is, I'll make it snappy. Are you ready? Everybody happy. Joe Worker gets gypped for no good reason, just gypped. From the start until the finish comes, they feed him out of garbage cans, they breed him in the slums. Joe Worker will go to shops where stuff is on show. He'll look at the meat, he'll look at the bread, and too little to eat sort of goes to the head. One big question inside me cries, how many fakers, peace undertakers, paid strike breakers, how many toiling, ailing, dying, piled up bodies, brother, does it take to make you wise? Joe Worker just drops right at his work and he drops. Weary, weary, tired to the core. And then if he drops out of sight, there's always plenty more. Joe Worker must know that somebody's got him in tow. But what is the good for one to be clear? Oh, it takes a lot of Joes to make a sound you can hear. One big question inside me cries, how many frame-ups, how many shakedowns, lockouts, sellouts, how many times machine guns tell the same old story? Brother, does it take to make you wise?
Zowie. That, of course, was Audra McDonald. That was from the film Cradle Rock, which dramatized the events behind that fateful opening night. Steve, his trajectory after Cradle in the 1940s was seeming to me, at any rate, from where I come from, trying to find other forms, film, art songs, mini operas. What is Blitzstein's trajectory in the 40s?
As you say, I mean, he was involved with the war effort. He wrote some review material. He was always just a little behind the curve. For example, he wrote a very powerful piece, the Airborne Symphony, in praise of the Air Force. But it didn't get done until 1947, after the war effort was over. I mean, the piece was praised, but it just didn't quite hit the mark. Pure's Kind of a Guy comes from No for an Answer, which Knife Plus actually revived in a concert version, let's see now, I guess about 2 years ago. Fascinating piece. And it's sung as a birthday song to the head of a kind of a union. It's really about the ostensible meaning of the song is that it's about people who have impeccable morals and look out for their fellow man and do the right thing. But there's another meaning to this song that I was very obvious to me. And when I programmed it, I used it in a song about gay men, which we called Manning the Cannon. It was the opening song because it's so clearly functioning as a very, I think, very funny song about gaydar.
Interesting.
And we just changed two words. We changed gals to guys, and then we changed the word dicks to cops for obvious reasons.
Obvious reasons. Wow.
I ain't a reading man, I ain't a thinking man, an eating drinking man, when I can get it to eat and drink. I ain't the suffer kind, I ain't the rougher kind, I ain't the buffer kind, I'm just a happy-go-lucky gink. But one thing I got an extra sense. I know what guys is like, I know what makes them click, I know what makes them tick. And when a man's okay, I know it a mile away. There's the kind of man when he passes by, I can tell that man's the purest kind of a guy. Black or white or tan ain't the reason why. I will know that man's the purest kind of a guy. Go on and ask me how I can be certain, how I can pick him out like a shot, and he will never upset my plot by acting dirty and sly like the usual guy in a spot. Well, I don't know how I know that I know, but I know he will not. How he says hello, how he says goodbye, how he winks his eye will show the purest kind of a guy. Though he's easygoing, you'll find that he knows his mind. That's the purest kind of a guy. Our little pride and joy, our little baby boy, he's kind of looking up, he's getting big, oh me, oh my. He's got a birthday, it is his birthday. That is the best day for the purest kind of a guy. Take it from one who knows, and don't make no mistake. Wherever there are Joes, the world is on the make. And so tonight is why we give a hello to the purest kind of a guy.
Well, that it could only be Paul Robeson. That was a record I grew up listening to, Songs of Free Men. Well, again, I guess that's part of the identity of Mark Bloodstein that makes him such a compelling American figure, is he really was going against every grain, crossing every grain in 1950s American mainstream culture, because he was Jewish, he was leftist, he was gay, and he had a streak of, I think, rather wonderful anti-commercialism. He's an interesting paradox in that way. He wanted to have a hit. He was not a hermit. He wanted to have a big popular hit, but almost all of his artistic instincts took him in more interesting, less palatable directions.
Yes, it's either it was, I think, very much a lot of things combined there. He didn't like to. He had trouble finding collaborators. Let's just leave it at that. I think, and he desperately needed them, especially as a dramaturg. He lucked out with Cradle Will Rock, but after that, all of his plays have very big structural problems, and it was hard for him to find people to work with that would really guide the shape of his theater works.
Interesting. Yes, a good librettist is always an important thing to have. Well, he teamed up with another, well, sort of teamed up. He was inspired by another left-wing individual in the 40s and 50s, Lillian Hellman, to write an opera/musical theater piece. Again, one of these pieces that you can define Six Ways to Sunday. Regina, based on her Little Foxes. And you have a marvelous recording of this on your Bloodstein album, sung by Karen Holvik. Would you like to set it up for us?
Sure. It's the song is What Will It Be For Me? It's Regina's daughter, Alexandra, who sings it. And it actually wasn't in the original score, but his producers and I think director prevailed on him to throw a ray of purity and sunlight into this very brilliant but very acid work. And it is a song full of expectations and hope for love. And I think it, I have a funny feeling that I'm projecting now that it was very personal to Bloodstein as well.
Here is Karen Holvik with Stephen Blyer at the piano.
Someone say I love you. What?
Beautiful. Karen Holvik with Stephen Blyer, our guest today at the piano. Hello, this is Larry Mazlon, your host for Broadway to Main Street. Today's subject is the idiosyncratic, wonderful composer-lyricist Mark Blitstein. And I want to thank the Kurt Weill Foundation for Music Incorporated for supporting our program today. Much obliged. Well, speaking of Kurt Weill, I would say that one of Mark Blitstein's most famous credits is the translation of the book and lyrics to the Three Penny Opera by Brecht and Weill, which ran for many thousands of performances downtown at the Theatre de Lys. Was there a sort of friendly competition between the two of them, Steve? Or do you feel that Blitstein sort of took the torch after Weill died in 1950 and took his kind of work as far as he could into the commercial arena?
I would say that they had a kind of a love-hate relationship. Blitstein's music, if you listen to Nickel Under the Foot and you hear that accompaniment, bah, it's the backwards accompaniment to Surabaya Johnny. Hmm. Like the chord is on the beat and the bass note's on the offbeat, but it's actually almost the same chords as Surabaya, but there the bass note is on the beat, like a normal song would have it. I know that Kurt Weill grabbed some project. He said, because if I don't, that Mark Blitstein's going to get to it before I do. I think, in my view of things, Blitstein was so indebted to Weill as an inspiration musically and artistically, and even in just as what he felt music theater needed to be, that it could only end up by being either those embodies or rivals. And I think it turned into rivals.
Well, speaking of bosom buddies, our next song is sung by Beatrice Arthur and Joe Sullivan. This is from the titanically successful off-Broadway revival of the Three Penny Opera, translated by Mark Blitstein.
Come on out, you gutter lily, you. Show your legs and let's all see how pretty. I'm always glad to admire beauty. They're the thickest ankles in the city. You thought you could make a big impression on my Mackie.
Dip-dye.
Guess you never met his old friend Jackie.
Dip-dye.
Well, you kind of make me laugh.
Who would kind of make you laugh?
Who would want a stupid cat?
Who would want one stupid cat?
How, now there's a leg for you, so Mackie needn't beg for you.
Well, you better ask him.
Yes, you better ask him.
You better ask him.
You better ask him. Ha, 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 ha. Somewhere else.
I knew I would make a big impression on my Mackie.
Oh, did you?
You'd be pleased to know I've met his Jackie.
Have you?
Well, you kind of make me laugh.
Now I kind of make you laugh.
Who would want a big giraffe?
Who would want what big giraffe?
Ah, you are so pitiful, imagining you're beautiful.
Bet you wouldn't ask him.
Certainly I'll ask him.
Go on then, ask him.
You better ask him.
A big, complete girl.
Him leave me falling, sweet girl.
Asinine.
Perhaps a little more tart in the original German, but there it is. Mark Blitstein.
Well, yes and no. That's always said about Blitstein's translation. I really think that it's pretty damn good. And I haven't heard a better one. No, I really haven't.
Fair enough. If for the performing stage, if you want to know what it says, literally stage there, you can go to the library.
Of course.
Blitzstein took on one of the most moving and difficult plays of the 20th century, Juno and the Peacock by Sean O'Casey, and turned it into, I think, an extremely successful show, at least from a musical point of view, at the end of the 1950s. Again, probably he could have used a better director and a better book writer. But the music was so good that it actually inspired what we call some cover versions, which was very rare for Mark Blitzstein back then. Here is Rosemary Clooney, of all people, singing a terrific ballad from Juno, I Wish It So.
I've an unrest inside me. Oh, it's long I have had such an unrest inside me, and it's getting real bad. I'm sleeping at night, and my heart beats so loud that I wake all dizzy and light with the dreaming and feeling this ache. Such a thumping inside me that I think I'll go mad. For I wish it so. What I wish I still don't know, but it's bound to come, though so long to wait. I keep saying tonight or today through the endless days, and my heart clamors and prays it will not come too late. But when come it does, in the shade of love or life, I will give my life and my love. I know I've such grand aims with so many names that I grow numb, but sure one is bound to come, because I wish, it's the unrest inside me, and I think I'll go mad.
I'm sorry I had to bring you the hard news, Mrs. Boyle. I have a lad of my own. I'm sorry.
I know. Oh, Johnny. What was the pain I suffered bringing you into this world, to carry you to your cradle, to the pain I'll suffer carrying you out of this world, to bring you to your grave. Sacred Heart of Jesus, have mercy. Take away our hearts of stone. Give us hearts of flesh. Oh, give us hearts of flesh. Where? Dear Lord God, take away this murdering hate. Give us thine own love, thine own eternal love. Where? Where were you, Lord? Lord, where were you when he was riddled with bullets and pain? Riddled with bullets? There was me poor son, riddled with bullets. Where were you then? Where was his ma? What was she doing when her poor young one cried out? Oh, where was his ma then?
Shirley Booth from Juno. We have to thank Goddard Lieberson for recording that show for posterity. I'm terribly fond of it. I think that was his sort of last hurrah on Broadway. We're with Steve Blyer, the artistic director of the New York Festival of Song, who's played and programmed Blitzstein many times over the decades. And he has teed up for us his favorite of Blitzstein songs. And I wonder if you could share with us why and tell us a little about our next selection.
Well, it comes from Reuben Reuben, which was Blitzstein's greatest failure in the theater. I think it played for literally 1.5 performances in Boston. They were so sure they had a hit on their hands, but it was just too abstract and dense and confusing for many audience members. Others did, in fact, love it. This song, the Rose Song, was the first song that Blitzstein wrote for this work. And it's about a character, Reuben, who has aphonia. In moments of high emotion, he's unable to speak, and he is in a moment of very high emotion because he's falling in love with this woman, Nina. And he tries to sing her a love song about he's trying to express his feelings. And you can hear the lyric doesn't quite make sense and doesn't quite hang together, but the music tells you everything. I always say that if Mahler had written the Broadway musical, this is what it would have sounded like.
Wow, that is a great introduction. Here is William Sharp singing with our guest Stephen Blyer at the piano.
It needs your hand. there a song? It needs your voice, your hand, and the sound of your voice. Is there a gown to rival moonlight with misty lace? Is there a gown it needs your face? Your face, your voice, your hand. And you, will you understand that like the like the song too, I wait for you, and like the gown, I seek your face. Oh, you who were fashioned to crown a rose and a song and a song and a
stunning. A beautiful song by Mark Blitzstein, who we have profiled today. That's one of the great, for me at any rate, fun things about Broadway to Main Street is we can take a little imperfect, perhaps, but brilliant aspect of American musical theater history and shine some light on it. Steve, do you want to give us any sort of closing remarks about Mark Blitzstein before we play out with the very self-same Jerry Orbach that inspired you on your bus ride up the Upper West Side as a kid?
Well, I feel that Blitzstein was a genius composer and a genius thinker, a very brilliant man with a lot of problems that almost amount to a failure complex. And people with far less high ideals, far less true inspiration, were able to turn out far more workable musicals than Blitzstein. And yet, for me, as a purveyor of song rather than of theater pieces, the richness of Blitzstein's musical inspiration and lyrical inspiration has been such a huge part of my life, my musical life.
So we will close out with perhaps Mark Blitzstein's finest moment as a theater composer. This is the end of The Cradle Rock from a revival in the 1960s sung by the one, the only Jerry Orbach. Thanks for joining us today, Steve.
You're welcome.
Damn skunk, I'll break you. I'll run you out of town and get us front page publicity, would you please?
Kill Lynch.
Listen, once and for all, you scared bunch of ninnies. Outside in the square, they're starting something that's going to tear the catgut out of your stinking rackets. That's steel marching out in front. But one day, there's going to be wheat and sidewalks, cows and music, shops, houses, homes, bridges, drugstores. The people of this town are finding out what it's all about. They're growing up. And when everybody gets together like steel gets together here tonight, where are you then? Listen, you Black Legions, you Ku Kluxers, you vigilantes, out and up there in the cradle of the Liberty Committee. When the storm breaks, the cradle will fall. Boilermakers are with us.
Up on the topmost bough of yonder tree now, like bees in their hives,
the ruffers
in their lackeys and wives, a swinging rocker by baby in
the rollers,
a cradle. Then they
steal your steel. They've done it.
They're marching down here. They got no permit to march.
Arrest them.
Arrest them. There's thousands of them. They're standing in front of the courthouse right here.
My God, what do they want with me?
Oh, don't worry. That's not for you. That's just my Aunt Jessie and her committee.
That's thunder. That's lightning. And it's going to surround you. No wonder those storm birds seem to circle around you. Well, you can't climb down and you can't sit still. That's a storm that's going to last until the final wind blows. And when the wind blows, the cradle will rock. The cradle will rock!
Well, where is the time all gone to? This is Larry Maslon here at Broadway to Main Street. Let's catch up next Sunday at 3.
There's so much more embracing still to be done, but time is...